Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Anything to talk about? No, like, I know it's not early morning, but it feels like early morning.
Feels too early for this. It's the daylight savings thing just occurred. Whether it was going into it or coming out of it, I don't remember. But we got supposedly an extra hour of sleep, and it does not feel that way.
No. Andrew looks how I feel. Not that I'm saying I look put together. I woke up with a massive headache. I don't know if it's because I didn't drink enough yesterday or I didn't wear my retainer last night because I'm old and now need to wear retainers. Well, not now. It's been having to go on. I've been old for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's a rough one and we did not party, so this is not warranted for
Are there celebrations for daylight savings ending or starting?
People... whatever? Just feel more rested. I think we missed the memo. Tuna. I'm watching a dog named Tuna in case you didn't know who Tuna was, but she just got up and I don't want her barking.
Hmm.
But she goes home today and I'm so excited. She's nice. She's sweet. She's, I want to be inside your skin kind of a dog.
No,
and
thank you.
There's only room for one of us in here. And she drools and begs.
Only room for one of you in there anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, good morning.
Good morning. Let us know if you guys like party hardy for daylight savings time ending and starting. Is that kind of like a whoop whoop? You know.
And if you're in Arizona, sorry, but also not sorry. Your time doesn't change. But that's kind of nice that your time doesn't change. Because as much fun as it might be now, it sucks in the spring when, you know, it goes back. But
yeah,
a happy daylight savings time. Granted, this will come out weeks after, but oh well, we tried.
Yeah. Well, hello.
Ahoy.
And welcome to the Under the Waves podcast. It's a show about all things shipwrecks and time on the Great Lakes. My name is Andrew. I shall be your captain for today.
And I'm Michelle. Welcome aboard this week's episode. And we are going to bring the energy once it gets into this, because Andrew's going into this a little blind. Granted, I was going to save this for you guys for a Christmas present, and Andrew kind of mildly convinced me to move it up accidentally, so... we're here. But a quick Captain's Correction Corner before we get into it. Dad wanted to make sure we knew that his old 1930s x-ray machine that came with the office and used to be chilling in one of the rooms did not did not give off radiation when it was turned on. After moving. When it wasn't turned on. What did I say? Was?
Omit when it was. Literally the exact opposite of what's written.
That's problematic. Probably a good thing you're the captain today. It did not give off radiation when it was turned off. Does that make sense? That makes sense.
Yes.
Still not saying what's written. Shortly after moving into the new office, he cut the cord so it couldn't be used, and like all X-ray machines, no radiation is emitted if electricity isn't being supplied to it. Makes sense. Didn't think about that in the moment. I think in the episode about the Eloise Asylum, we mentioned old-timey X-ray machines and apparently talked about the radiation coming off of it. Turns out we were wrong. Shocker. So just in case y'all were wondering, we wanted to make sure we didn't lead someone astray for eternity. So in case you were listening and that bothered you, consider yourself vindicated. And that was from several episodes ago, but they were a little behind due to some things going on, and now they're catching up, and guess what? We have retributions to pay, so
there's our correction.
Okay. We haven't had a correction corner in a while, so good to be humbled again.
Thanks for catching it. We appreciate the proper information. We'll make sure our researcher stays more on top of it.
Ah, the straight and narrow.
Come on back. Back to center.
Getting a little ahead of herself sometimes, but that's okay.
Well, thank you for correcting us, Captain.
Mm.
All right, so for today, we are talking about a shipwreck that very few of you might have actually heard of. It's not like there's a song that's been written about it that's gone viral before the word viral really took off. It's not like the shipwreck has any yearly anniversaries or references or gatherings or anything like that to commemorate and talk about it. It's not like it's one of the most iconic shipwrecks in the Great Lakes, aside from the Titanic, which is actually fairly well known around the world, including
just real quick, the Titanic is not in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, that's in what case I was like,
and aside from the Great Lakes.
Okay, yeah, we were just talking about our researcher. No, this is more so my eyeballs being the problem here, I think.
Before anyone's like, wait, the Titanic's in the Great... Yes, this is in Lake Erie. Did you know?
Something cheeky to say. Yeah, it's not like she's one of the most iconic shipwrecks in the Great Lakes. And aside from the Titanic, this is a separate thought, is actually fairly well known around the world, according to a quick Google search. That's what it's designed to say.
Mm-hmm.
The Titanic did not go down in the Great Lakes.
Our researcher might get her Christmas bonus yet. We'll see. It's on the fence right now.
It's thin ice. Thin ice. And it's not like this ship just celebrated her 50th anniversary of sinking, which is quite a wild accomplishment, only a few days before this episode was released. That's right, folks. You know the name, you know the song, you know the history, and today we're talking about the only, the one, the Edmund Fitzgerald. Goosebumps, shivers.
I'm so excited.
So
I'm so mad you get to introduce that. But so excited.
I love how the cookie has crumbled. So this, as of this like recording, just yesterday I was talking to Michelle, and I was like, "Hey, you know what this year is, right? Like, it's the 50th anniversary." She's like, "Yo, I know." And so I proceeded to listen to the song probably 7 times yesterday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just...
That would have been a cry fest.
It was great. It's just such a moving song. And I feel like, I don't know, we can get into the sentiments later, but I feel like this is... I don't remember a time in my life where I didn't know about the shipwreck. Based on like us growing up in the Great Lakes area, and
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's S-P-R-E-A-K-E-R.com.
Just having parents who instilled a a good history of shipwreck.
A good fear of, a good healthy fear of water.
But just, I don't remember a time of not knowing about it. And so this is, I don't know. It just feels like, it's just a piece. It is a
feels
very
like coming
big
home.
Piece. Yeah, it's a, exactly. Feels like coming home. It's a very big piece of Michigan and Great Lakes history. So I'm, you know, terrible tragedy, but I'm very excited to be getting into this to talk about it. It's going to be an experience.
Yeah, I usually like writing stuff out. It's like, this is exciting. I'm excited to share it. But this one, like, I kept getting like building. I was like, this is more exciting. This is more exciting. Why was I putting this off for so long? But also it's very daunting because there's so many sources out there that talk about this. This is, I think, I feel like of all the ones that we've talked about and covered and stuff, the most like documented, again, besides the Titanic, shipwreck, period. Yeah. Let alone probably the most documented in the Great Lakes. And it's like, it's so hard to take years and years and years of people, 50 years of people doing research and talking about it and figuring things out and like condense it down and not do it a disservice. So hopefully we're not. Yeah.
This won't be perfect, but yeah, we're gonna give it our best shot.
We're throwing our hat in the mix and hoping for the best.
Exactly.
I definitely learned some things through this, and hopefully maybe there's some new things that Andrew will learn too. I don't know. And
I'm sure
and
there
for
is.
You guys, because there's a lot of things apparently I thought I knew the story. Turns out I didn't.
Yeah. Always good to learn new things. Well, we'll start this out by saying that this is one of the most, if not the most, covered shipwrecks. Again, aside from the Titanic, it's definitely the most familiar to people around the Great Lakes region. There are countless movies, shows, docuseries, articles, books, posts, etc. about this ship. No pressure to us at all, as you mentioned. And while we want to show respect to the 29 men who lost their lives that day and cover the events that actually happened as accurately as possible, it's also not out of the realm of possibility that mayhaps we forgot something. It's hard to condense everything that you said that was speculated and found out about the Fitz into a short, in theory, podcast episode. That being said, if you know something we missed, or if there's some familial lore that has been passed down that you know of about the ship and the wreck, please feel free to email us underthewavespodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to add to our collection of knowledge about the Edmund Fitzgerald.
There's a book that just came out in October last month. Crap, I gotta find it. It's called The Gales of November. It's by John U. Bacon. Apparently, so he, I don't remember how long it took him to do this book, but he interviewed like a lot of people, of people who were related to those who went down with the ship and who were like at the bar, the last dinner and beer these men had before they left the next morning, or they who was like running the lighthouse, or like these like people that are just like integrated into the story. And he like interviews them and talks about it. And he took the trip. I don't know if he took it twice or once, but he took the trip that the Edmund Fitzgerald would have taken. And he like got to go on board the Anderson, which is one of the ships that I think he was like 10 miles away from the Fitzgerald when it sank. And like, spoiler alert, it sank. If you don't know by now, you've had 50 years to find out. But it's such a
goodness.
Cool.
What?
I'm sorry. It's such a cool concept of a book, and I think it just released on October 5th, and so I was trying to get it as an audiobook, a digital book, last night and listen to it, but it was I couldn't figure it out. It might have been my addled brain at a late hour trying to figure out technology and it wasn't working, but I want to get my hands on this book, and I've heard it's really, really good. There's a lot of really good reviews about it so far, so if you want to look up The Gales of November by, I think it's John Bacon. What a name, John
that
U.
Sounds
Bacon.
Like, that sounds like a great book, though.
Definitely recommend it. If I'm not reading it, I've been recommended it, and I want to recommend it to others without reading it. So, yeah, just, I don't know what sparked that. But to add to one of the other things that the Titanic is listed in, I guess. But I'll stop talking. This is your episode. I'm sorry. Carry
you're
on.
You're just excited. I appreciate the enthusiasm.
Stoked.
as most of you have probably seen on various social media accounts, not just ours, but this year, 2025, marks the 50th anniversary of the sinking of the SS Edmund Fitzgerald. The Fitz, as she was more affectionately known as and referred to, was the largest ship on the Great Lakes when she was launched on June 7, 1958. She would remain the largest carrier on the lakes for 2 years until the SS Murray Bay was launched in 1960 at a length of 1 foot longer than the Fitz. Seems unfair. But to be fair, a lot of sources don't count the ship as being larger than the Fitzgerald, instead stating that she remained the largest ship until the first 1,000-footer was launched on the Great Lakes in 1972, the MV Stewart J. Court. Other nicknames of the Fitzgerald include the Mighty Fitz, the Big Fitz, Queen of the Great Lakes, and some lesser common names like the Toledo Express, the Pride of the American Flag, the Pride of the American Side, and now the Titanic of the Great Lakes. It was a good-looking ship.
Got a collection of nicknames. She is. Yeah. Like, I like that look. I don't know if I like that look because it's iconic because of who she is, or if I like that look because I like the look.
I don't know. That's honestly a good way to put it. I'm not sure.
I like it because it's familiar now, for sure. And I do like, I mean, I can appreciate certain boat shapes. Like, I like a tugboat. I think those are cute. The whole bulk carrier is meh. But this is a good looking ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with yeah.
Indeed. I think so. I feel like when I see a picture like this where it, like, it looks a little gloomy, looks like it's getting into, you know, fall-ish time. And I just see it there, I just hear like a just like in the background. It's like, it just hits you. It just hits you right in the chest, you know?
In the feels.
Yeah. Well, let's back the story up just a little bit to the before even the Edmund Fitzgerald was built. It's March 2nd. 1857, and the Mutual Life Insurance Company of the state of Wisconsin is founded. Originally opened in Janesville, Wisconsin, the company soon relocated to the bustling city of Milwaukee in 1859. Shortly after, this company experienced its first two death claims via a train derailment that ended up taking the lives of 14 people, two of whom were life insurance policy holders, and the losses amounted to more than what the company possessed at that time. So the company president, Samuel Daggett, then treasurer Charles Nash, personally lent the remaining funds to make up the difference. After this, the company grew, expanding their market throughout the Midwest and along the East Coast.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes, no editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
The name soon changed to the Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company, and by the 20th century, their primary focus was on life insurance.
And we're not sponsored by them.
No, actually, I pay them monthly.
But we could be. Wait, what'd you say? I missed it, I guess.
I said, no, actually, I pay them monthly.
Oh. They're sponsored by you.
Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance, sponsored by Under the Waves podcast.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. By the mid-20th century, Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company decided to invest in the iron and minerals industry of the Great Lakes on a more large-scale basis. This branch out also included the construction of a lake freighter, which would be the first of this kind of investment by any American life insurance company. You might have connected the dots already, but this ship was the SS Edmund Fitzgerald. In 1957, Northwestern Mutual contracted Great Lakes Engineering Works, or GLEW, located in River Rogue, Michigan, to design and build their ship. Northwestern Mutual told GLEW to construct the ship, quote, within a foot of the maximum length allowed for passage through the soon-to-be-completed St. Lawrence Seaway, end quote. The, quote, Seaway Max, end quote, or the specifications for the maximum size a vessel could be to travel through the locks of the St. Lawrence Seaway that connected the Great Lakes to the Atlantic Ocean are as follows. Length, 740 feet, or 225.5 meters. Width, or beam, 78 feet, or 23.8 meters. Depth, or draft, 26.5 feet, 8.08 meters. And height, which is above the water, 116.5 feet, or 35.5 meters. Again, these are the maximum dimensions a ship could be in order to still fit through the seaway, not the dimensions of the locks themselves. Fitzgerald's keel was officially laid on August 7th, 1957, as hull number 301. While said to have only been a foot away from the max length, the reality was more that her length was fine, but her draft was a foot and a half away from maximum measurements. Unless you're looking at the Sioux locks, the maximum ship length for that is 730 feet, of which the Fitz was within a foot of the maximum length allowed at an impressive 729 feet long, or 222 meters. She also had a beam of 75 feet, which is 23 meters, and a draw of 25 feet, or 7.6 meters. Her gross registered tonnage was 13,632 tons. Net registered tonnage was at 8,713 tons, and her deadweight tonnage, or how much weight she could actually carry that included the cargo, ballast water, drinking water, fuel, crew, etc., was 25,500 tons. At the time of her construction, in 1957 through 58, the Fitz was valued at a cool $7 million USD, which is just shy of $81 million USD today, which I feel is not, like, that's expensive. But
I was going to say, it sounds expensive to me, but
I mean,
maybe for a freighter, I guess. And we're used to dealing with, like, some older ships that it's not in the millions yet, but... Also, that inflation rate of 7 million to 81 million
in years seems like,
insane.
Well, what? It's more like 60 years. 60 or 70 years? 70.
Oh, yeah. 70 years. She worked for like 17 years, so I guess it's like 67. Is that how math works?
That's still very sad.
That seems like a really big jump.
Maybe that's why I can't afford a house.
Yeah, if you can't afford a ship, you can't afford a house.
Yeah, one plus two equals seven. I get it right there.
Exactly.
The Edmund Fitzgerald was named for the longtime executive and newly elected Northwestern Mutual Company chairman of the same name. Fitzgerald's own grandfather and great uncles had all been captains on the Great Lakes, and his dad owned the Milwaukee Dry Dock Company, which built and repaired all sorts of ships on the lakes. Fitzgerald actually did not want the ship named after himself. He proposed names like the Centennial, the Seaway, the Milwaukee, and the Northwestern. However, the board who was deciding the name for the ship was adamant. Fitzgerald himself abstained from the final voting, and the other 36 board members and Fitzgerald's wife, Elizabeth, voted unanimously to name the ship the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oops.
No, these, you know, it's not like it's not really on the nose. He's like, no, please don't. Everyone's like, no, we're gonna do it. So it's not like he was like, no, please, really do it.
But oh, darn!
Exactly.
You name a ship after myself. I couldn't.
Yeah. No, he seems like he. It seems like it was.
It was truly modest of him, not like a fake modesty of like, oh, exactly. It's okay.
Yeah, that's kind of.
But
cool.
Do it.
An interesting side story on the chairman/human version of Edmund Fitzgerald. His family had quite the long legacy when it came to ship names and a rich history when it came to the Great Lakes. His great-grandparents immigrated to the United States from Ireland, choosing to settle in Michigan and start a farm. Dee's great-grandparents, William and Juliana, had 12 or so children, six of them being sons. All of the sons were captains on the Great Lakes, as we mentioned just prior that Edmund's grandfather and great uncles were captains. After being captains, or perhaps while still doing so, the family got into the business of shipbuilding. And if you build a ship, you might as well name it after yourself, right? The first ship was named the Edmund Fitzgerald. That's kind of wild. I didn't know that. Our listeners probably didn't notice the difference, but this one is spelled E-D-M-O-N-D, not E-D-M-U-N-D. I didn't notice, so I'm sure they didn't either.
It is. I didn't think it was that hidden, but yeah, I mean, it looks correct.
It looks good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was named after the more current Edmund's great uncle, Edmund, but with the O, not the U.
Yes.
Moving on. This ship, also referred to as the E. Fitzgerald, was a two-masted schooner, very different from the new Edmund Fitzgerald with a U most people know and love today. After the E. Fitzgerald, two other ships of similar names were built and launched. We had the R. E. Fitzgerald, and then we had the W. E. Fitzgerald. Much like the more present-day Fitz, the E. Fitzgerald foundered during a November storm on Lake Erie in 1883, almost 92 years prior to the sinking of the Fitz. And for both ships, as I'm sure you probably know about the later one, there were no survivors. And keep this in mind, as it's often seen as a bad omen to name a ship after another sunken ship.
Yeah, I didn't... Well, I knew that part, but yeah. I didn't know the other parts, that there were other Fitzgeralds before this
same
one.
Here.
And that it was such like a, I don't know if that's why the guy was like, oh, don't name it after me, because technically it's named after someone else. But I think the original Edmund Fitzgerald with an O sank November 14th, and this one sank November 10th.
Wow.
So it's like real close together, which is kind of not helping with the whole maritime lore and superstition and stuff. But yeah, it was pretty wild. I kind of want to look into that one a bit more. There wasn't as much information, shockingly, because there's no song written about it. But I'm not mad at the song. I don't know why it came out that way. It's not that big a deal.
It's not that deep.
Not that deep. I can control myself. It's okay. No, it wasn't as much information about it, but I also didn't like look as deeply into it. So I don't know. Maybe look for a little short story upcoming about that or not. I don't know. But Edmund Fitzgerald, round two.
Ding ding. The day of the Fitz's christening was quite eventful and like a series of unfortunate events. I did read that right. Okay. Over 15,000 people showed up on June 7, 1958 to attend the launch ceremony. Elizabeth Fitzgerald, Edmund's wife, was to start off the celebrations by smashing a champagne bottle over the bow, as one does. However, this ended up taking her three attempts to try and smash the bottle.
It was a heavy-duty bottle.
Yes.
It was a trick bottle made out of rubber.
That doesn't help the whole thing about superstition around
No, boats. There's a lot that went into this ship that's superstitious.
Yeah. After this, the Fitz was ready to be officially launched, but the shipyard crew was struggling to release the keel blocks that would launch the ship into the water. This caused a 36-minute delay before the Fitz was released into the water. She was launched sideways, like many ships, but upon doing so, created such a large wave that she doused the spectators watching. After making quite the splash, the Fitz crashed into a pier before finally righting herself. And one witness later claimed that they thought the ship was trying. One witness later claimed that they thought the ship was, quote, trying to climb right back out of the water, end quote.
She's like, it's too cold. I don't want to be in here.
I mean, it's pretty dang cold.
I don't blame her.
Not sure if it was before the launch or after. But one last final mishap of the day was when one of the spectators, Jennings B. Frazier from Toledo, Ohio, suffered a heart attack and died. That's
very
unfortunate.
Bad way to start off the career of the Fitz. Also, this is a really cool photo.
It is a launching. Yeah.
Poor Jennings.
Are there some people on the boat? It looks like it.
There were some. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a wild ride.
Yeah, especially she's like tipping all over the place and crashing into a pier.
Yeah.
Wild. That's insane.
Yeah. The Edmund Fitzgerald, now in the water, was not quite completely built yet. She still had 2 more months of interior work to be done before running and completing her sea trials. By ore freighter standards, the interior of the Fitz was luxurious. She was furnished by the then upscale retail department store. She was furnished by the...
Sorry.
What?
Is that the dog? It's me. I'm just going to say we have a special guest creating a background track.
I will not let that. Whenever I hear it, I will stop. I will wait. This one deserves it. Not saying others don't, but like...
I was going to say, I didn't want to interrupt you a third time, so I was trying to be quiet. But yeah, you got to show respect to the Fitz.
She was furnished by the then upscale retail department store J.L. Hudson Company from Detroit, Michigan. The Hudson designed all of her furnishings, including deep pile carpeting, tile bathrooms, drapes over the portholes, and leather swivel chairs in the guest lounge. Along with crew and captain quarters, there were 2 guest staterooms for passengers. The crew cabins even had air conditioning. The Fitz had a large galley and fully stocked pantry that supplied meals for 2 onboard dining rooms. And for the running of the ship herself, the Fitz's pilot house was outfitted with, quote, state-of-the-art nautical equipment and a beautiful map room, end quote. On September 22nd, 1958, the Edmund Fitzgerald completed her 9 days of sea trials and was officially ready for service.
The Fitz... I wonder if 9 days is pretty standard, because it seems like a lot.
I was thinking that wasn't much.
Oh, really?
We're both not vibing today. I don't know.
I'm like, well, that's a lot of days. You're like, that's not enough days for a ship to be seaworthy.
I was doing some research or some like listening to, I forget the name of it. It was a submarine back in the day. I think it was one of the first nuclear submarines. It ended up, when they're doing testing on it, they're doing some crush depth testing type stuff with it, or max depth testing. Anyway, it ended up having an issue and couldn't come back up. I forget what it is. It ended up well exceeding its crush depth, and that was that. But they literally took it to, I think, the Bahamas or whatever for a couple of weeks or something for sea trials after it had a big refit or something like that. So anyway, it was, I don't know, I feel like 9 days is kind of short, but also it's not
going under the
water. It's not a submarine, yeah, exactly.
It's staying up, but again, it's still dealing with a lot of different climate
environmental
things.
Yeah.
And if you find that, I don't know if it was a video or a podcast you were listening to, but if you could send it my way, that sounds very fascinating.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
And we'll scary.
Do. Yeah. I think Brick and Mortar, like IMMOTAR, whatever, that's a YouTube channel. They have stuff about it. I feel like it's the Blackfin or no, it was, what was it?
Yeah.
Thresher. The Thresher.
The Trash.
No, I was saying, I was going to say Thrasher.
No. Thresher. You said Trash. I was like, oh no, that's a horrible name. I mean, if it crumpled up, I'm sorry, too soon. I remember watching a docuseries on the Titan and just said it would kind of have the same thing of like, it would go to max depth and have issues and being brought up and like, oh, we'll just flatten it out and do it again. It's like, no, you, if it's having issues, you have to actually fix those issues. You can't just like iron it out and hope for the best. Like, you have to figure out what's actually causing those issues. So that's also a wild docuseries on, I think it was Netflix or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, I watched that. Yeah, I don't think it was, like, the one I saw, I don't think it was a docuseries, but...
Oh, this had, like, 3 or 4 episodes.
Maybe it was. Thought. Oh, it might have been.
Like,
I don't know.
Really long.
But yeah, but the one I saw, it was... I think it was on Netflix about the Titan. It was very sad. Just the negligence behind it.
And a lot of people, like, knowing about stuff going on and then being fired or hushed to keep it silent. Speaking of the Titanic, the Ebb and Fish Channel, full circle.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes. No editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
Oh, there we go. Oh, brought it back.
Feel free to get rid of any of that you want to. I just sent you the video. Probably. You really should watch that channel. That channel has my heart. It is like the dude is very monotone. He just tells the story. And what's cool is any story he covers where there's loss of human life, he has no ads. He doesn't run anything like that just out of like respect. It's super crazy. But like he just tells.
Feel like a dick.
Oh no, you're fine. I wasn't saying that as like a. Ugh. Everything we cover.
Guess what he does? He's a nice person.
But he also has a Patreon. He has whatever else. But like he has some really good animations. He has some really good information. I really recommend watching his videos. So.
Okay.
Anyway.
I am looking forward to this. Oh, it's only a half hour long. That's not bad.
Yeah, some of them are hour and a half probably. That's the same guy who did the Texas Towers I sent to you a while back. Did you watch
that? Yeah, no. I need to. I'm sorry. I know. Yep, get in line.
All right, ready?
Let's do it.
The Fitz had 21 watertight cargo hatches, each measuring 11 feet by 48 feet, which is 3.4 meters by 14.6 meters. These hatches were made of 5/16-inch thick steel, which is roughly 7.9 millimeters thick. The Fitz was powered by a coal-fired Westinghouse Electric Corporation steam turbine that produced 7,500 SHP, which is straight horsepower, over the 1971 and 1972 winter layup, her boilers were converted from burning coal to burning oil. With this change, the Fitz would carry around 72,000. With this change, the Fitz could carry around 72,000 U.S. gallons of fuel oil in her tanks, which is 270,000 liters.
That's quite the fuel up bill.
That would be expensive.
2,000 gallons.
Yeah.
It's insane. I wonder how often she had to fuel up.
I don't know.
I guess we can figure that out.
If you know, let us know. Otherwayspodcast@gmail.com.
I was going to say, I'll try to figure it out. But yeah, someone else can do the math. That'd be great.
Go for it. The Fitzgerald was propelled by a single fixed pitch propeller that came in at 19.5 feet in diameter. That's a big boy. And that's 5.9 meters for our non-imperial listeners. Her top speed was 14 knots or 16 miles an hour, 26 kilometers per hour. And she was usually manned by a crew of 29. Another later add-on she received was in 1969. The Fitz's maneuverability was greatly improved by the installation of a diesel-powered bow thruster. And can you imagine moving 729 feet of ship through the water without the use of a bow thruster? That sounds absolutely insane.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's a raise hand feature.
Yeah, I just saw that. A little on the nose there.
It'll pick me. The Emma Fitzgerald typically refueled after every 1 to 3 round trips between the upper and lower Great Lakes. Typical round trip took about 5 days, so the ship usually refueled up every 1 to 2 weeks.
I mean, that's a good distance to go.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's efficient, but I mean, it's a good distance.
A large freighter could burn 14,000 gallons of fuel per day at full speed, With a capacity of 72,000 gallons, a Fitzgerald could operate for several days on a single tank, allowing it to complete its multi-day round trips without needing to refuel on every single leg of the journey. Refueling 65,000 to 75,000 gallons at a time was common. So they go pretty close to empty. I've played that little game before. It's not always fun.
I feel like walking to a gas station with a little 5-gallon jug is a little easier than this. Swimming. If you run out.
Yeah, we have Boat US for a reason.
The Fitzgerald was a Great Lakes bulk freighter, for those who didn't know. She was one of the older styles that had become so iconic in the last 50 years since the sinking. The Fitz, of course, was fairly long, with a superstructure on both the bow and the stern. The bow contained the pilot house and a few crew quarters. The pilot house, according to a YouTube miniseries put out by Duluth News Tribune, was, quote, eyes and ears of a vessel, end quote. And side note, we'll post a link to the first episode entitled The Pride of the American Side, Edmund Fitzgerald, 50 Years Below, Episode 1. It's really quite good, and they have interviewed so many people in that who were and were tied to the wreck of the Fitz. Definitely recommend what we've heard so far.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of the book I was mentioning, except this guy, like, he's actually done, like, trips and stuff on it. They're interviewing people from, like, museums or people from Lighthouse and stuff that have information on it, and some that were kind of part of the history but more so know about the history. But it's really good how they've done it so far, and I think it's like a little 4 or 5-part mini-series. It's kind of like a podcast. It's kind of just a YouTube video with commentary. So, yeah, it's good so far. We'll definitely post that. They interview a lot of cool people.
I need to look into it. That sounds good. Back to this, the Fitzgerald had a pilot house on the front where all of the steering, radio, radar, and tracking stuff goes on. And then there was also a superstructure on the stern that housed the galley, more crew quarters, engine room, stuff like that. And because the Fitzgerald was a bulk carrier, it wasn't like she was carrying shipping containers and boxes and what have you. She had literally just that, bulk holds. 3 massive empty spaces that would just be filled with cargo. And in her case, that was the taco night pellets.
It's a taconite. Sorry, taconite. But it looks like taco night. She was just filling. Oh, I'm so sorry. That was probably really loud. She was just filled with tacos. Oh my gosh, it's the Titanic all over again.
How do you say it? Taconite?
Taconite.
I mean, it's like it kind of looks like taco nut. I'm sorry.
I didn't even see that until now. That's
taconite
so
pellets. That's what she'd carry.
Yep.
An important thing to note here, especially since the Fitz is sometimes called the Titanic of the Great Lakes, the cargo holds were divided by a wall of mesh. And remember how the Titanic had bulkheads that were supposed to seal off parts of the ship should they flood, keeping the rest of the ship safe? The Titanic did not have that. It was like having a screen door instead of a water. The Fitzgerald did not have that. Not really like the Titanic did either, because they didn't go all the way to the top and didn't seal, but that's a different matter. It was like having a screen door instead of a watertight one. And to be fair, the Titanic's bulkheads didn't reach all the way to the top of the ship, and water was able to spill over. Wow, it's like you
jumped right over that gun. Whoa!
Flooding compartments as it went. Not sure if bulkheads would have saved the Fitz much like it didn't save the Titanic, but interesting to note nonetheless.
I love how that was suddenly now my fault.
Come on now, you're why, like, didn't you write that sooner?
Your fault now. Jeez.
In screen or mesh compartment dividers were used to help with efficiently loading and unloading cargo, providing more visibility to see if the cargo was properly distributed, and to help prevent cargo from shifting without the cost and operational inconvenience of full watertight seals and bulkheads. While Northwestern Mutual commissioned the building of the Fitz, they did not operate her. Their practice was to purchase ships for operation by other companies. For the Edmund Fitzgerald, Northwestern Mutual signed a 25-year contract with Oglebay Norton Corporation for them to operate the ship. Oglebay Norton designated the Fitz as the flagship of their Columbia transportation fleet. Her main job was to carry taconite from Minnesota's Iron Range mines near Duluth back to the ironworks in Detroit, Toledo, and other various ports. Her home port was technically Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We say technically because she only visited the city once in her career. This was due to a steelworker strike that had halted steel production nationwide. The strike forced ore carrying vessels like the Fitz to go to port. Nearly every steel mill in the United States was shut down. Columbia Transportation, who managed the Fitz, arranged for space at Jones Island in the port of Milwaukee for the rather large ship to dock and ride out the strike. She arrived at port on July 21st, 1959. 2 days later, on July 23rd, the Fitzgerald was opened up to the public for special tours, and more than 11,500 people came aboard and visited the Fitz. The pilot house was closed off to the public due to, quote, delicate, expensive equipment installed there, end quote. That makes sense.
Probably smart.
Yeah. The Fitz would end up being docked in Milwaukee for 3 months before the steel strike was resolved, and she was able to return to work on October 26, 1959. She never visited her home port of Milwaukee again.
Yeah, for her whole shipping career, she only visited once for 3 months, and then that's it.
That's wild.
Back to work and home, like, not home porting. What is it when they lay up, like winter layups elsewhere?
Yeah. Taconite is a low-grade iron ore that is mined, then processed into steel, making pellets. It's a variety of banded sediment rock where over 15% iron minerals are interlaid with quartz, chert, or carbonate. Colloquially, over time, taconite has also become the overall term for a lot of iron-containing products and byproducts. Some of the processing techniques and the product, iron ore pellets itself. In the late 19th and 20th centuries, the United States was mining so much high-quality iron ore that it became known as a, quote, uneconomic waste product, end quote, or unprofitable. However, by the end of World War II, much of the higher-grade iron ore had been exhausted, so taconite, usually containing 30 to 35% iron, became quite valuable as a new source of the metal. Taconite itself is when the ore is ground up into a fine powder, and the magnetite, which is the main ingredient in steel production, is separated out using strong magnets. The powered iron concrete concentrate.
It's a superhero now.
The then powdered iron concentrate is combined with a binder that is used as a flux, such as bentonite clay and limestone. We're learning a lot here, aren't we, folks? Fluxes are chemical reducing agents that usually help molten metals flow better during smelting. It's also used with flux core welding, just so you know.
Flux capacitor? Anybody?
Yeah, that too. Pick it up at your local O'Reilly's. The iron concentrate and binder are rolled into pellets about 10 millimeters wide, marble shaped, and contain about 65% iron. These pellets are then fired at a rather high temperature in order to harden them and make the pellets durable. This is needed for the next step, the blast furnace charge, for it to remain porous enough to allow heated gas to pass through and react with pelletinized ore. There's a lot more that goes into it, and we might not have covered it thoroughly enough or in a good enough way, but that is a very, very basic lesson on what taconite is, besides being the thing that the Edmund Fitzgerald carried around with her, on her, in her.
anything. Yeah, I thought it was interesting because everyone keeps saying iron ore, which, I mean, that's what the whole Gordon Lightfoot song says, iron ore. And technically, it's colloquially now called iron ore, even though it's not. It's taconite. And I just wanted to explain kind of what that is.
I did not know. I appreciate that. Yeah,
I didn't either. I thought it was iron ore. And it's kind of, not really. Yes.
Yes.
A byproduct.
Yes. The Edmund Fitzgerald was quite the record-setting workhorse in her day, often beating even her own milestones. Her record cargo load for a single trip was set in 1969, and she carried 27,842 tons of taconite iron ore pellets. She also set seasonal hall records on 6 different occasions. No wonder she earned all of her nicknames. For 17 years, the Fitz carried taconite around the Great Lakes. Loading the ship up with taconite took only about 4.5 hours. However, unloading her took about 14 hours. A round trip between Superior, Wisconsin, which is right across the channel from Duluth, Minnesota, and Detroit, Michigan, usually took the Fitzgerald an average of 5 days, and she would complete around 47 trips of that nature per shipping season, with her main route being between Superior, Wisconsin, and Toledo, Ohio. By 1964, the Fitz became the first ship to carry over 1 million tons of taconite through the Sioux locks. And by November of 1975, the Fitz had logged an estimated 748 round trips on the Great Lakes, covering more than 1 million miles. That was, quote, a distance roughly equivalent to 44 trips around the world, end quote, a 1998 Thunder Bay Press article wrote.
That's impressive. Like, I know these ships travel, but she was moving.
Yeah, constantly on the move.
That's insane. And only 64, she's launching, what, 58? So, like, yeah, about, I don't know how much she worked on in 58, because she kind of was launched late, but 5-6 years, she already carried over 1 million tons of taconite.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Remember the 2 guest room staterooms that were on board the Edmund Fitzgerald? Up until a few weeks before her fatal trip in November of 1975, passengers often traveled on board as company guests. Author Frederick Stonehouse, who wrote one of the first comprehensive books about this ship and about the wreck in his book, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, wrote, quote, "Stewards treated the guests to the entire VIP routine. The cuisine was reportedly excellent, and snacks were always available in the lounge. A small but well-stocked kitchenette provided the drinks."
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes, no editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
Once each trip, the captain held a candlelight dinner for the guests, complete with mess jacketed stewards and special clam digger punch, end quote. That sounds disgusting to me. I'm not sure what that is. And for those of you, much like us, who don't know what clam digger punch is, it's a savory tomato-based alcoholic punch that is kind of like a Bloody Mary, but instead of the plain tomato juice, a clam and a tomato, otherwise known as clamato juice, is used.
Don't keep trying.
It's apparently quite popular in Canada and was inspired by the flavors of an Italian dish, spaghetti Alvongole,
I think.
Alvongole, or spaghetti with clams and tomato sauce. Yeah, that still doesn't sound great.
Yeah, apparently it was a thing. Also, I love this whole setting you up and you just hit it out of the park.
Set them up, knock them down. We're doing it. This is great. I appreciate it. It's almost like it's written in a way that's just leading into the next thing. Props to our writer.
She might be on for her Christmas bonus. It's more ticks to
She's coming back around. Yes. She's doing it. All right.
It was iffy for a second there.
On the fence. Well, we're still not done yet. We'll see. With all the fancy accoutrements, her size in general, constant record setting, and even a DJ captain. Care to explain?
Don't worry. It gets into it.
I'm excited.
Give it a second.
Setting up, knocking down.
Give it a
Edmund
sentence.
Edmund Fitzgerald quickly became and remained a favorite for boat watchers throughout her lifetime. Now, I'll bet you're wondering who this DJ captain was and how he got this title. You know, it did hit me. I was curious.
Like, this whole setting up thing is working great. You're like, I still don't trust you. Two sentences later.
I don't. So, I mean, you know, you keep me on my toes. Peter Paul Pulser, that's a great name, became the Fitz's third captain in 1966. While under his direction, the Fitzgerald set her cargo records, but that's not what Captain Pulser was best known for. No, he was known for piping his music day or night over the ship's intercom system while passing through the St. Clair and Detroit rivers. You want me to go back and quote it?
That's fine. It's just a party barge now.
I love it. That's awesome. While traveling through the Sioux locks, Captain Pulser liked to come out of the pilot house and use a bullhorn to entertain those on the shore with a commentary about the details of the Fitz. Our researcher read somewhere that Pulser liked to play songs by American musician Herb Alpert over the intercom. Another source mentioned that he played popular music, but there's nothing to back either of those claims up that our researcher could find. Some of Herb Alpert's famous songs are Lady Fingers, Tijuana Taxi, Spanish Flea, and A Taste of Honey. All those are real toe tappers. In total, Captain Pulser, the DJ captain, served as a Great Lakes sailor for 42 years, with the Fitzgerald being his last post. He retired in 1971 and lived until 1997, where he passed away at the age of 88.
Who knew the Fitz had a DJ captain?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Also, just like, if he's going through those locks late at night, I think that would be a little bit problematic. But yeah. If he's just like blasting music, that's kind of fun.
Kind of.
And
cool.
Then he's just like, "Oh, you guys are witnesses to this. I'm just gonna tell you all the facts about the Fitzgerald while you're standing here."
Good entertainment for sure.
Very much so.
In 1969, the Fitz received a safety award for 8 whole years of operation without a time off work injury. A time off work injury just means that no employees had been harmed enough to require a full day or more off of work. The ship, on the other hand, had a few of her own injuries over the years. On September 6, 1969, the Fitz ran aground near the Sioux Locks and sustained some internal and external damage. In April of 1970, she collided with the SS Hochelaga.
I thought it was Hochelaga, but it could be Hochelaga.
Hochelaga. She collided with the SS Hochelaga. This caused damage for the second time in less than 8 months, but apparently there wasn't any significant harm done to either ship. On September 4 of that same year, the Fitz hit a lock wall. This type of accident would happen again in May of 1973 when hitting a Sioux lock wall, and June of 1974 also hitting a Sioux lock wall. On January 7, 1974, the Fitzgerald lost her original bow anchor about 1 mile to the west of Belle Isle in the Detroit River. According to the article our researcher read, quote, "None of these mishaps were considered serious or unusual," end quote. Granted, most, if not all, of the ships we've covered have their own kind of accidents, and some usually have way more than this. Many episodes back, we mentioned how old wooden ships were built to last around 10 years or so. Researching more now, 15 to 25 years seems to be a pretty decent standard, all things considered. Some well-seasoned wooden ships lasted way longer, but they seem to be more of the outliers. Since the steel ships, like the Western Reserve, proved to not stand up in the cold waters of the Great Lakes, many changes have been made to the manufacturing of ships over time. When the Fitzgerald was launched, freshwater ships were being built to last more than half a century. And if she hadn't sunk, the Fitz would still have had quite a long career ahead of her.
That's a long time for a ship to last.
Yeah. Just goes to show, you know, technology and designs. I mean, at least at that point, they were really trying to make stuff last a good long while back then.
That, and I think also, like, routine maintenance and keeping things up. I think some people allude to later, and we'll get into this eventually, but her having the incidences of, like, hitting a ship and hitting the locks and grounding did affect her structural integrity a little bit, which I assume that would happen. Because, like, you know, there's only so much you can straighten out without replacing, and I don't know how much was replaced fully, but some people do assume that, but other people are saying, no, this is pretty standard for a ship like this who has a 17-year run of having certain incidences, which, okay. I mean, I feel like no incidences are better than some, but I guess it could be worse.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. In 1972, Captain Ernest McSorley officially took command of the Edmund Fitzgerald. He would be the last captain the Fitz would sail under. McSorley was a veteran mariner with over 40 years of experience under his belt. He had commanded 9 ships before joining the crew on board the Edmund Fitzgerald. McSorley was born in Spencerville, Ontario, but his family later moved to Ogdensburg, New York. There, young McSorley caught the boat bug while living alongside the St. Lawrence Seaway. In 1930, McSorley started his career as a deckhand, and by the age of 31, he had worked his way up to be the youngest master reed captain on the Great Lakes, captaining the SS Carleton. Overall, Captain McSorley was a quiet person who was well respected by his contemporaries as a skillful captain. He was also rather well liked and respected by his crew, who he treated as true professionals and not just someone to boss around. McSorley turned 62 in 1975 and was planning on retiring either after the 75 shipping season or running one more and then retiring, depending on the source. He was happily married and had no children, but his wife, Nellie, had 3 children from a previous marriage. After this last run of the season, he planned on celebrating it with his wife at one of their favorite restaurants. The Fitz's record of good service continued into 1975. However, on October 31st, 1975, the Coast Guard noted a problem during a routine inspection of the Fitz while in Toledo, Ohio. The inspectors found that a number of hatch covers that sealed the cargo areas would not close properly. This doesn't matter so much if the waters are calm, but if waves are washed on board the deck, the hatchways would be leaking into the cargo hold. The issues were notated and repairs were scheduled for her layup after the 1975 season. Around 8:30 a.m. on November 9, 1975, the Edmund Fitzgerald is being loaded up with taconite pellets.
You just got a bunch of plellets on board.
Yes, give me some plellets. Around 8:30 a.m. on November 9th, 1975, the Edmund Fitzgerald was being loaded up with taconite pellets for usual cargo at the Burlington Northern Railroad Dock Number 1. The Fitz was scheduled to carry the 26,116 tons of cargo all the way down to Zug Island on the Detroit River. She left Superior, Wisconsin on the western side of Lake Superior at 2:20 p.m. headed east. And that's where we'll pick back up next week.
Ooh,
in part 2 of the Edmund Fitzgerald story.
I didn't want to hold them captive for hours on end.
Yeah. I saw that we were getting towards the end of the document. I was like, how do you wrap this up
so quickly?
And
she sings,
there's
end
no
of
way.
Story.
I was like, there's no way you can do it justice this quickly.
I wanted our team, I don't know, wanted to like really focus on the cool life that the Fitzgerald had and a lot of the stories that I hadn't heard before. I guess you hadn't heard some of them before too, which is, I'm glad it wasn't just me. And just kind of like, you know, she was a really cool ship. Here's why. It wasn't just because she sank that she's a cool ship. Like, of course that does make it interesting and it is moralized for that reason, but she was really cool in and of herself as a ship while she was still above water.
Indeed.
So wanted to really focus on that. So yeah, part 2 is next week. Wild.
Stay tuned.
It's not going to be as much fun as this week. I'm sorry. Last week's trivia, we know that technically Halloween is long gone and over with for this year, but hopefully you were able to stock up on the post-Halloween treats that went on sale. Our trivia for last week was, what was the most popular Halloween candy, grossing out around $509.85 million in sales in October of 2024? Our hint was that it was first introduced in 1928, and the answer is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Or do you say Reese's? Hang on.
Yeah, how you're
people
saying
say
it.
Reese's
don't even
differently.
Try.
No.
Don't even try. It's not right.
I'll go with that.
Reese's.
That.
Yeah. Maybe it's Reese's? Right. I don't know. I'll be honest. It's not what I was thinking. I was thinking that people just bought like the cheapest kind of thing. And so it just racked up. Mm. I was thinking like it'd probably be like a Tootsie Roll or something like that, which is kind of just like, oh, meh. Yeah.
Didn't even but think about
the fact
those.
That it's Reese's or Reese's, fantastic. It deserves first.
That's
in
yeah,
my
that's
humble
a decent,
opinion.
Decent choice. These were followed by M&M's, which is $500.82 million. Thank you. After M&M's is Snickers at $456.91 million, Hershey's $324.63 million, and then Kit Kats at $306.51 million. This year, Reese's also retained their dominance or maintained their dominance in the market as number one bestseller for Halloween. Yeah, so 2 years running with a lot of money being spent towards these little peanut butter cups. This week's trivia, there's none for now. Swing on by next week for more Great Lake Shipwreck Adventures, where we'll be covering, like you said, part two of the Edmund Fitzgerald. You can submit your own stories or story wish list to our email, underthewavespodcast@gmail.com. See the pictures related to today's episodes and all of our other ones on our socials, which are also Under the Waves Podcast. And be sure to stop on by our website for our show notes and ways to support this pod, and that can be found at www.underthewavespodcast.com. Remember that links regarding mental health, what to do if approached by ICE, and SNAP/WIC and other food sources are listed in our show notes every week. Hopefully you all voted recently. If you can't make it in person, mail-in ballots are a great option. Just make sure you send it back out on time. Hopefully by the time this comes out, we'll have made massive improvements on the way things are being handled and people are being treated. It's hard to have hope sometimes nowadays, but seeing a lot of community being built and sustained through these times definitely helps, and it helps encourage the strength to keep fighting the good fight. We're forever grateful for our listeners, and in case no one told you yet this week, we love you and we're proud of you.
Share this episode with, first, a fellow Edmund Fitzgerald lover, much like yourself. We're not as rare a breed as you might initially think. And second, someone who can't wait to swap skeletons for Santa the moment that Halloween ends. You know, the person, the one who's untangling lights while the candy bowl is sitting out on the porch. This individual has Mariah Carey on standby at all times, de-thawing, and throws a wreath on the door before the jack-o'-lanterns even have time to cool. The same twinkle light enthusiast and tinsel trendsetter of a person insists November 1st is basically December. What these people fail to notice is the holiday between Halloween and Christmas, which is Thanksgiving. Why don't they like Thanksgiving? What did Thanksgiving ever do to them? Was the turkey burned 1 year, or was the mashed potatoes made with vanilla milk instead of regular milk? Was Marie Callender at fault for ruining another Thanksgiving? No one else available to come to their Friendsgiving that they planned last minute 1 year and forgot to send the invites out. Why are we icing out a holiday centered around yummy food and good company? Maybe they'll find a way to work it out with a therapist someday, but until then, I guess there are worse things than being merry, bold, and impatiently festive. Share this with them and maybe start the offering with a candy cane. We release new episodes every Friday, and until then, folks, fair winds and following seas.
We'll catch you next time under the waves. Bye.
Cheers.
You swirled around, but you got there.
You got it. Just like flushing a toilet.
Oh, jeez.